It's Nick Reed in the Morning Show. Good morning, Springfield. You're listening to KSGF News Talk Radio 104.1 FM. I'm James Clary, filling in for my friend Nick. We've been talking about the state of education in the United States, and we were speaking the last hour about the Reese Committee investigations in the early 50s and the Dodd Report, and we have on the line, live via Skype from the sunny climes of Japan, James Corbett of the Corbett Report. How are you, James?
I'm doing pretty well. Thank you so much for having me on today, James.
Oh, it's always a pleasure. I so appreciate you taking the time. You are a busy man. You've got the Corbett Report, BoilingFrogsPost.com, and you do the
GRTV videos. Yeah.
Yes.
International Forecaster newsletter and a lot of other things besides.
I mean, you have so many things going on. As I introduced you earlier to my audience, saying I really think you're at the leading edge of investigative journalists in what I hate this term, but we'll say the alternative media. I think it's the real media.
Well, I kindly accept those kind words. Thank you very much for them. But I really don't think of myself in any special terms. I think I'm just one example of a phenomenon that's taking place worldwide right now. And that's people who are starting to realize that they're not just passive recipients of information. They don't just have to sit there and take whatever they're told by the media. We now have access to unimaginable amounts of information at our fingertips. It has never been easier in the history of the world to check into so many different things. And me, just being a curious sort, as soon as I got access to the internet and started delving into all of this types of information, I had to start sharing it with people. And I think that's a phenomenon that's taking place every single day now, as more and more people start to realize there's a world of information out there that they're not getting through the regular mainstream sources, and they're taking it online. And that's where the real information revolution is happening, if you can call it that.
Yeah, it really is. And you know, the example we were talking about, the Dodd Report. I mean, this is something none of us were taught this in school. Now, I know you were from Canada originally. You live in Japan now. But, you know, I am a product of the United States American education system, majored in history in college, love history. I never heard about the Reese Committee.
And there's a good reason for that, because as the Reese Commission found out, it was the tax-exempt foundations that were steering the teaching of history in the U.S. school system, and specifically at the college level, trying to form basically a core curriculum that would weed out any information that was counter to what these foundations were doing. That's exactly what this incredible, unbelievable Senate committee, or select committee of the U.S. House of Representatives found. For people who don't know, it was called the Select Committee to Investigate Tax-Exempt Foundations and Comparable Organizations, but it's usually just called the Reese Committee after one of its chairman, B. Carol Reese. And this ran from 1952 to 1954 and was eventually shut down under interesting circumstances, but not before their main investigator, Norman Dodd, was able to release some pretty explosive information about what he found, getting unparalleled access to some of the meeting minutes of some of these foundations, specifically the Carnegie Corporation, going right back to its foundation in 1908. And it's pretty amazing the types of stuff they managed to dredge up there.
Well, really, I mean, to me, it seemed like a pure Marxist agenda. Would you agree with that?
Well, I wouldn't say pure Marxist. I think what they found was that there was an attempt that was going on through these foundations to really take over the machinery of the diplomatic and executive machinery of the U.S. government and steer that government into something that looked more like an amalgam between what was that time, of course, the Cold War. It was the West. It was the capitalist system. It was America versus Russia versus the communists. Mm-hmm. And they were really trying to merge those two so that it could be one kind of world system. And I think, obviously, here we are after the Cold War, and communism isn't really an ideology that's being used by anyone, not even the Chinese, really, at this point. But I think the operative idea there is still holds. I think there still is a group that wields influence at that level, at the State Department, that's trying to steer the apparatus of the U.S. government towards more of a world governmental system. And I think we're seeing that from every aspect of the news that's coming out these days.
Globalism really is their ultimate goal. One world government.
Well, that's it. And we see that right now in the headlines with this Trans-Pacific Partnership. material that's coming out, that we get little tiny bits and pieces of information, scraps of information from the table, but we still don't know most of what's actually in there. And it's going to be, if they have their way, they're just going to pass it, and we'll find out later on what it involves. And everyone remembers how well NAFTA turned out for the United States, let alone Canada and Mexico, right? So I think people have good reason to be very suspicious of what's going on.
Well, in you living in Japan, it was definitely on my list to ask you about the TPP and the fast track. You know, I read an article this morning. Rubio and Graham won't even answer if they've read the text of it or not. They won't even answer if they've read it or not before they voted on it.
That's absolutely insane, isn't it? I mean, how can this possibly be a government that supposedly represents the people that won't even let the people read the text of the deals that it's negotiating behind closed doors with other countries? And the craziest part of this is that it's been ruled, and it's been on the books for at least a century now, that that the ability to make treaties can actually undermine and have precedence over the United States Constitution. So they can literally create treaties that will go against the Constitution, and they can do this behind closed doors in secret and then pass it, and you won't find out until after it happens. That is absolutely outrageous, and I can't imagine how any American could be sitting there and taking that lightly.
Well, and you know, a lot of us don't, but I think so many of us feel helpless and powerless, and that's why I think your reporting and others like you is so important, just to get the word out. A lot of people really, James, you know, they've got their phone in their hand, they're on Facebook, social media, and they don't really care. But this is outrageous. I mean, you thought we would have learned after Obamacare when they didn't read the bill, but apparently not.
You got to pass the bill to find out what's in it.
Yeah.
Right? And I think part of what's going on is just absolute overload. I mean, people have heard about information overload before, but think about what's happening now. We have not only the Trans-Pacific Partnership, but with the TISA, the Trade and Services Agreement, is it? The TTIP is another one they're working on. There's so many. I do this for a living, and I can barely keep up with what all of these treaties are and who's signatories and who's where it's being negotiated and all of this. It's so much information that no average person at the end of the day, after coming home from work and spending time with their family, is going to have time to research this, let alone do anything to oppose this kind of an agenda. And I think the people who are pushing these deals rely on that most people just can't even keep track of these, let alone figure out why they have to oppose them.
Yeah, it's insane, and people really do feel helpless. We'll talk a little bit about what people can do when we get back. I know you've offered a lot of solutions. I'm speaking with James Corbett of the Corbett Report. You're listening to News Talk Radio, KSGF 104.1 FM. We'll be right back.
You're listening to KSGF Mornings with Nick Reed on 104.1 KSGF, Springfield's News Talk FM.
I know it. Oh, don't get me singing. KSGF News Talk Radio. It's Nick Reed in the Morning Show with James Clair. We're talking to James Corbett of the Corbett Report. How you doing this morning, my friend?
I'm doing excellent. Thank you so much for having me here.
We appreciate you coming back. We're going to take a couple calls. We've got Jack on line one. Jack, you with us?
Yes, I am. How are you doing, Ms. Clary?
How are you, sir? I'm doing well.
Oh, pretty good.
You're speaking to James Corbett as well.
Oh, hello, James. Yes, you were talking about doing treaties behind closed doors.
Yeah.
And, you know, the American people, we are so helpless. We have no rights, no judgment on what our politicians do anymore. There's nothing we can do. And if somebody would have a revolution and start it up and back it, I'd be right behind them.
I think a lot of people feel. Thanks for calling, Jack. What do you think about that, James? We were just talking about solutions. Jack says if someone started a revolution, he'd be right there, man.
I think a lot of people probably feel the same way.
Yeah.
And that's something that's been noted a lot recently by a lot of different people, even some surprising people. People might remember Zbigniew Brzezinski, the former national security advisor to Jimmy Carter, and he's been in Washington circles for decades now. A few years ago, he was going around making the rounds with this speech about how for the first time in human history, people are waking up and getting politically active all around the world, and it's kind of this unstoppable phenomenon. He was painting this as this terrible thing, because now he actually said it's easier to kill a million people than to control a million people. And it used to be the other way around.
Wow.
And that's a pretty scary statement for someone who's that close to the center of power in Washington to be saying. But I think that's reflective of the phenomenon. There are more people that are engaged and active and interested in doing something because people can see how crazy this all is. But the question is, what do you do about it?
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about that. You've offered many videos on the Corbett Report and some of your other media outlets on solutions. Give me, what can people do besides, you know, it used to be, it's like, write your congressman. Well, I've texted my congressman. I happen to have his cell phone number. He quit returning my texts a while back though. What are your solutions? What do you think, James?
Yeah, I'm not big on the political solutions because I think we've seen where a lot of them have gone. And anyone, for example, who got caught up in the hope and change of a few years ago probably knows better at this point, or I'd like to think so. But unfortunately, every 4 to 8 years, they come around with a new set of politicians. And hey, this time it's different. And a lot of people continue to fall for it, but fewer and fewer people each time, I think.
Yeah.
So that does leave the question, what do you do if you can't just write your congressman and expect that they're going to take care of it? What do you actually do? And I think this has to come down to what we can actually accomplish in our own lives and in our own space. I mean, it's great to think about the world's problems, but if we can't even get our own act together, then nothing's going to fundamentally change. So I look at various ways that we can do that on my website. And just some of the examples that I think are extremely important are something as simple as just starting a garden, a vegetable garden in your backyard. This is just basic common sense. We have this space. We're using it, all this water and everything, to feed lawns that are just basically mowed and just look nice. Why don't we actually do something with it, produce some actual food, just so that we have at least the idea of what it is to produce a little bit of our own food, and maybe, you know, go down to the local farmer's market and interact with some people in your area so that you know about the local food supply, so that if there was ever a disruption in this industrial food system that's the most people are getting all their food from these days, you would have alternatives. There would be things that you could do. You wouldn't be helpless and starving. And let's not think that that's a crazy idea. I mean, remember back in the 1930s, how incredibly difficult it was for people to feed and clothe themselves. And that was in a society that was still mostly rural, a lot of agrarian people there, and they were having troubles. Think about that nowadays when people are living in tight, compact cities and not doing anything. So I did an episode of my podcast recently talking about guerrilla gardening and people finding ways to do gardening in the city in tight urban spaces. Some really amazing things. Even in South Central LA, there's a guerrilla gardener out there who's making the rounds and doing TED Talks and things, talking about how he transformed the side of the road, little plots of land, tiny strips of sidewalk and things that he managed to turn into vegetable gardens and started producing food that is now feeding not only his family and the local neighborhood, but they're starting to fund businesses through this. I mean, it's incredible what you can do when you start trying to take things back into your own hands rather than just relying on politicians to solve everything.
Well, and I think that, you know, this goes back to our conversation about the Dodd Report, the Rees Committee, that I think the globalist agenda is to make us dependent. And so what you're saying is each of us in our own space, in our own time, need to become independent. And I could not agree more. I'm a chef. I'm a restaurant consultant as well. And I encourage all my clients. I'm like, look, guys, you have this huge piece of asphalt. Take a little bit of it, put some dirt, and grow your, just start with herbs, for instance, you know, fresh basil on a pizza. It makes all the difference in the world.
It sure does. And this is, I think that's a good for so many different reasons, not just because of the food it produces, but also the community it can produce when you start into community gardening, and the way that it fosters local business and local trade. There are people who actually make a business out of selling to local restaurants with food that they grow from their own vegetable gardens. There's all of that. But then there's also just the act of actually starting to do something, growing something with your own hands and taking some of that power that lets you you know, again, it's not that we have to rely on all these big, overwhelming systems that most of us don't even really know, you know, where our food is coming from or where it's coming. Once you start taking that into your hands, you start to realize that affects everything in life. And for example, like with myself, starting a website and starting all of this, you know, YouTube and media and producing all this content, I never in a million years thought I was going to get involved in media. I had no plan to do that. But once you start doing it, you realize, oh, okay, so this is something that I can do. And it's a pretty overwhelming process. And it starts to, I think, counteract exactly what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. The fact we've been indoctrinated for generations to believe we just have to leave everything to the authorities. The authorities will take care of it. Well, we saw how that worked in Katrina or Sandy or places like that. And I think we know we can't just rely on authorities to help us out in times of crisis.
No, and you know, this the authorities, if you will, also try and paint anybody who takes, you know, small steps to be prepared in case there is an emergency as, you know, crazy preppers. Although the same authority, FEMA, recommends that everybody have a 3-day supply of water. Hey, have some food. You know, I bought a filter that will filter apparently sewage water into potable water. It cost me $80. You know, I know I'm going to have drinking water if there is an emergency. And I think the other thing, you said it was overwhelming, that process. You know, it's empowering when you begin to become independent and get it really empowers you. Look what you've done. I think you're a great example of that.
23 million views on YouTube now, I think. I mean, it's just incredible to me. I'm sitting here in my apartment in Japan, reaching literally millions of people around the world with a message. I mean, that's just unbelievable. I have to pinch myself. And it is. I mean, success feeds on success. And once you start to feel that, oh, okay, we can go out there. We can actually affect the world. We don't have to just be affected by it. It really changes our mindset. And unfortunately, you're exactly right. I mean, the last refuge of trying to criticize something is just call people crazy for believing it. There's no downside to increasing your independence. What's the downside? There is none. So they have to call you crazy for trying to be prepared for things.
We're talking to James Corbett of the Corbett Report. I'm James Clary, sitting in for my friend Nick Reed. Let's see what's going on with the news with Dave Misay. Morning, Springfield. It's Nick Reed in the Morning Show, KSGF 104.1 FM. I'm your humble host, James Clary, sitting in for my friend Nick Reed, who's in Florida, getting a tan, we hope. We're speaking with James Corbett, live from Japan, of thecorbettreport.com. We've posted a link at ksgf.com to the Corbett Report, and if you haven't, if you don't know anything about James Corbett, check out the Corbett Report, start watching his videos, and I think you'll find a wealth of information, including solutions to what many of our callers express is just kind of a sense of despair and outrage that they can't do anything. And before the break, James, we were talking about just how the simple act of growing your own food can really empower you. And what,
that's,
you know,
right.
What other solutions? You've offered a lot of them on your website, but what other things can people do to feel empowered?
Well, I think it's again, it's a process that feeds on itself. So I think people should start small and see where it goes from there. Like you said earlier about growing just some basil or something, and I think once people start to see the success that they can have, it starts to build on itself. And then I think we can start approaching some of the more fundamental issues in our lives. The question that everyone has to answer in some way: how are you going to put food in the table? How are you going to put a roof over your head? It's a real struggle out there for a lot of people, and increasingly so. I mean, we saw what happened in 2008. We know that the Federal Reserve has tried to patch the economy over with some of their funny paper money, the printing presses that they've been running. I think a lot of people understand this is still a very precarious economy out there. What do you actually do about that? I mean, you're just at the whim of whatever people are willing to give you business or employ you, and there's not much you can do about it. Well, no, I think there are things that you can do about it. And so one thing that I looked at recently is this idea of the peer-to-peer economy. And basically, this is the idea that we have, for a couple of centuries now, we've been living in an industrial economy based on industrial manufacturing, building things in factories and then shipping those finished products out over all over the country to so people can go to the mall and purchase them. Obviously, that's starting to change in fundamental ways. And taking the analogy from peer-to-peer networking online, for people who don't know, that's basically just a network where there's no central server that that handles all the information. Instead, different nodes on that network connect with each other directly. Well, in the same way, we can think of the economy as a central server system in the industrial economy. You have these factories that are like these central servers that ship out the final products to all these different nodes. Well, in a peer-to-peer economy, people can interact with each other directly. And that's what's happening right now with all of these ideas. People have probably heard of Uber or Lyft or these kinds of ride-sharing services or Airbnb, which is, you know, you can basically rent some space in someone's house or something if you're going on vacation instead of renting a hotel room. These types of ideas, I mean, there's many, 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 many more of them out there. In fact, I just read about a new business. Someone's starting up a find a local tailor to come to your house and personally, you know, tailor your clothes for you kind of thing. And this is, I think this is really important. I mean, it sounds kind of trivial, but I think it's really going to transform the economy because now people can connect directly with each other. We don't need these sort of big, huge corporate structures to be the middlemen between me and my neighbor. We can actually interact with each other and find each other quite easily through these types of processes. It doesn't have to be online, but a lot of it is taking place online. And that frees up people to start doing things they actually want to do. And I guess I'm living, breathing example of that. I mean, again, I couldn't have imagined in a million years I ever would have been involved in creating media. And now I do it for a living because this technology has enabled me to find this audience that I couldn't imagine. If I was born at any other time in human history, I never would have had an audience like this. And here I am, and here it's happening. And that's happening for a lot of people right now. And I think that's a really hopeful and positive transformation that's taking place right now.
Yeah, it really is. And it's similar to an organization my restaurant was a part of years and years ago. It was just a barter network. People that had different services and things to offer. I put my restaurant in. If someone wanted to come eat, I remember I got topsoil for my new house from a guy. You know, he ate a sandwich at my place and he brought me dirt. It was awesome.
That's it. And you've got websites now popping up that are starting to coordinate that, not only community basis, but even countrywide basis. And you can get all sorts of, I mean, any task, any chore, anything that you have that needs to be doing, you can basically put it out for tender by all these people online. And if you have a service you can perform, you can put yourself out there and you can start earning money that way. It's really quite incredible. And I think it's really going to start challenging some of these ideas that we've had about how the economy must work. And I think that's for the good.
Yeah, I think it's great. I want to talk to you a little bit about the blowback from some of this. You mentioned Uber, for instance. There's been quite a bit of, you know, the taxi unions have gotten involved and they're trying to shut some of these down. And now I want to ask you specifically, we have a mutual acquaintance. I don't know her well. I think you do. Alexandra, who has a Forbidden Knowledge website.
That's right. I don't know her well, but I do know.
Yeah, I think you guys were in Acapulco together.
That's
but
right.
Anyway, she has claimed that Google has cut her income stream for views by a significant amount. Do you know anything about this?
I do, in fact. In fact, it's not just her. It's a number of different alternative media outlets. One that I know personally, it was Luke Rudowski from We Are Change.
Yes.
People haven't seen his work. He does excellent work, basically putting out videos, a lot of videos where he sticks the microphone in the face of these politicians and asks them the questions that no one in the mainstream media is going to ask
them. WeArechange.org, right?
That's it.
Yeah.
And he does excellent work like that. But recently, just a couple of months ago, he earned most of his money through YouTube advertising, putting ads on his YouTube videos. And suddenly YouTube started demonetizing a lot of his videos and saying you can't put advertisements on them. And not there was no reason given for this. It just suddenly demonetized. And now any video that he has that has any amount of views, they won't let him put advertisements on it. So that's completely taken most of his money away right overnight, basically flip of a switch. And there are other people talking about how their their views have gone down, even though their subscribers are going up and things of this nature. So there's definitely some tricks that are being played right now. And I think that's another sign that there really is, I think, a phenomenon happening that the powers that shouldn't be, as I like to call them, would probably like people not to think about or not to know about. And it's one of those strange things. I mean, if you know that this phenomenon is happening, I think people would become more energized by it.
Yeah.
But if it's kind of being kept in the shadows, and you're made to feel like you're the only one who thinks these things, you're the only one who cares about this, then I think that's the way that we can just continue to go along, to get along, and maintain this status quo.
Yeah, it's just amazing to me, and it seems like these attacks on YouTube, Google Play, are really directed at the alternative media.
It seems that way. I mean, I can't say anything definitive. I don't have any documents,
you know,
but it seems I know a lot of people in the alt media who have been basically complaining about this, and it's really gotten quite bad in the last few months.
Sounds like a topic for another Corbett Report. We're talking to James Corbett of the Corbett Report at CorbettReport.com. I'm James Clary, sitting in for my friend Nick Reed. It's the Nick Reed in the Morning Show on KSGF News Talk Radio. We'll be right back. KSGF News Talk Radio. It's the Nick Reed in the Morning Show. This is James Clary. We're speaking with our friend James Corbett. Was kind enough to give us an hour of his time from Japan, and we're just talking off air about the legislation that put the internet in the hands of the FCC. And you were commenting there's some good news on that front. What's that all about, James?
Yeah, well, for people who don't know, basically, there was the big kerfuffle over net neutrality, the idea that all information on the internet has to be treated equally. And so your telecom provider can't give you fast service to some big corporation website and slow service to some independent website. It has to all be the same. And so there's been some talk, well, maybe the telecoms are going to start changing that. So we need some sort of law to keep the net neutral. So everyone, of course, supports that. Everyone wants that kind of idea, except, of course, for the big corporations, I guess. But everyone thinks that that's the way the internet works. That's the way it's fair. And that's what's created the internet as we know it. So we've got to protect that. So the FEC came along, the FCC came along recently to say, OK, we'll protect net neutrality. We'll start to regulate the internet like a utility. So they're actually using the same or bits of the same legislation that were used back in the 1930s to regulate the electricity utilities and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
They're now using that for the internet, which, again, sounds great because, they're protecting net neutrality. But of course, it's the foot in the door for the FCC and other agencies to start saying that they have control over the internet now, and they can do this or that to it. So there's been some talk about the FCC or the FEC starting. Basically, you might remember back a while ago, there was the rule in the United States, the fair coverage rule or whatever.
Yes.
It was called, where you had to present both
sides
on every
viewpoint,
on every
yeah.
radio show. Well, they were talking. There was some talk that that might actually happen on the internet, and so websites might have to provide links to websites that disagree with them and things like that. Very strange and very troubling for people who believe in free speech. Well, recently the FEC came out with an order saying specifically that they are moving that the commission direct to OGC to exclude from the rulemaking any proposal affecting political activity on the internet. So at least for now, they're saying openly and in black and white, they are not going to try to regulate political speech online. So that's a good thing for free speech. And we'll see if they live up to it. But at any rate, that's what they're saying.
Well, what about that? That is good news indeed. And I remember that whatever the act was when they were trying to give both sides of the political speech. What about what Google's doing on their search engines now, that there's a truth meter? What, talk a little bit about that.
Yes. Well, this is a story that made the rounds a month or two ago. Basically, a website picked up that Google's research department had created this paper where basically they'd created a new search algorithm that ranked websites. Instead of ranking them by popularity, it could rank them by truth or truth factor or whatever, which is an interesting idea. But basically, it takes this website and it examines all the different things that it says on the page and tries to compare them against whatever database of truth.
Yeah.
Google wants to put against it. And if it's reliable information, according to Google, then it will get higher in the search rankings. So there was a lot of stories about this. The good news about this is that it's only a research paper right now, and there's no proposal at the moment that's on the table to make this an actual part of the Google search algorithm, but it's something that they could do, and maybe, and who knows if we'll even know, because of course the Google search algorithm is a secret sauce that they can't really reveal to the public, so we won't even know. But that, of course, the big question there is, well, what constitutes truth according to Google? I mean, how do they get to decide, especially for contentious political issues, whether or not, you know, this or that is the truth, and then ranking sites according to it? And since almost everyone uses Google to search for information, of course, that can really affect people's access to information and, mm-hmm. and the types of things that they know and understand about the world.
Yeah, I'd love to see Google's truth database, wouldn't you? I mean...
There are some interesting examples in the research paper itself, and I actually linked to it on Corbett Report in the article section. So if you go and find that that article I did, you can read some of their examples of what constitutes truth. It's pretty interesting.
Oh, it's amazing. I'm telling you. I got to thank you. I learned a new word today, kerfuffle. I love it. That's a good one. I love it. You know, we're talking with James Corbett of the Corbett Report. And James gave us a couple examples of what we get a lot of calls from people that are outraged. They're disappointed. Close to despair. It's like, what do we do? We know the state. Everybody knows that our country's in trouble, that the state of the world, that things aren't going the way that we feel they should. And James, I think you've made a couple really good points. Grow a garden and peer-to-peer economy that offer your services. You know, Craigslist is just one example. If you're a carpenter, put your services out there. You know, I actually recently got my car fixed, James, by a guy who's just a young kid, but he had some skill in mechanics, and he fixed my car for $60. The dealer wanted to charge me over $1,000 for the same thing.
Yeah.
I mean, so it's amazing. Well, what?
That's incredible.
Let's talk about... other solutions. I know you've offered at thecorporatereport.com. For our listeners, we have a link on ksgf.com. Please check out James's work. It's important work, but he's offered many other videos. I know you answered a question recently on the Corbett Report from from many people that probably ask you, what can we do, James? Well, you've given us two examples. Anything else that pops in your head that
Quite a few other things that pop into my head. So, for example, I mean, people are concerned about the NSA and the spying that's going on right now, mm-hmm. spying on all the phone calls and the data on the internet and things of that nature, as they should be. Well, what do you actually do about that? Again, we saw that just recently this passage of this USA Freedom Act that's actually just going to make that data collection on the telecoms. They're going to do it, and the NSA is going to ask for it, and this is supposed to solve anything. Of course, it just creates a new problem, a different problem. So, again, what do you actually do about that? Well, one idea that I thought was really quite ingenious is this group that's trying to reinstitute this idea of nullification, to nullify laws that are unconstitutional. Mm-hmm. And using that as a basis, they've been trying to push this legislation in a number of states, but perhaps most importantly in Utah, to basically get state governments to stop cooperating with the NSA because they are engaged in unconstitutional spying on the American public. And their proposal would be a very big blow to the NSA, specifically in Utah, where they've just constructed this giant data center that they're presumably using to store all this information. Well, that data center requires such things as water to be pumped in to cool these incredible amounts of servers, these huge server farms. If the state stops cooperating and stops supplying the water, the data center basically becomes inoperable. It's a tiny little idea, but it has this huge effect of actually stopping this institution that seems overwhelming. So I think that's a really interesting one that I've talked about before on my podcast.
Yeah. That's
and there's just so many others that we can think of.
We've been speaking with James Corbett from thecorbettreport.com. We've put a link on ksgf.com to all his work, and you can see many, many other solutions that he's provided. James, we so appreciate you taking the time to talk to us today, and hopefully you'll agree to come on again next time, my friend.
Anytime you need me, James.
Okay.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks, buddy. This is James Clary sitting in for my friend Nick Reed. This is KSGF News Talk Radio 104.1 FM.